when I run the marathon, I was like, just run like 26 miles. Like, I am strong-willed. I must be. But when it came to drinking drugs, I was just powerless. You know, I had no control over that. And I just remember thinking, you know, I won the London Triathlon. I was just like, you know, it's 2-3 days later and I'm back here again. You know, I just couldn't understand it. But I now understand that I am strong-willed. I was just channeling it into the wrong areas, you know.
Yeah, I mean, focusing on the wrong addiction things. Is more powerful than willpower, I believe.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scholefield. In this podcast, I speak to some incredible people about mindset, mental health, addiction, and recovery. And I share my own journey throughout these conversations. So whether you're on your own path of self-discovery, recovery, or transformation, inspired by human stories of mental resilience, or supporting someone who is struggling with addiction, make sure you follow and subscribe to This Is Powerful. There'll be a new episode every Thursday. In these episodes, we will be talking about drug and alcohol misuse, suicide, sexual abuse, and some other heavy topics. So please take care when listening. Today we have a great guest, Ross Mack, international DJ, nightclub promoter. Nearly 11 years sober, his work has really taken off, running successful sober events as well. And we have a good discussion about his routine and what he does in sobriety today. Ross, thank you for coming on This Is Powerful. Much appreciated, mate. I know you're a busy man.
Yeah, thanks for asking me.
Can we go back to the beginning, where you're from and how was your upbringing?
I come from a really loving family. Like, when we actually had more than we ever dreamed of growing up. You know, we were really, really lucky. And I grew up on the rough streets, the mean streets of a place called Broxbourne in Hertfordshire, which
is a lovely area.
It's lovely, yeah. It's really nice. I live only like 20 minutes from there. But yeah, I grew up there. But I was really naughty as a kid. And when I was 5, I was expelled from my infant school. So what I used to do was, because I got a twin sister as well, and they thought I was showing off in front of her, so they moved me and done loads of things. But I used to be I would just get up and walk out of class and go and sit in the field. And now as an adult, my brain says, oh, go and wander over there. Go and have, do you know what I mean? So even, I look back now and think it was just my brain was just wired different, even at that age where it just, I didn't think, but now obviously looking back and doing work and stuff like that, it's made me realise that, oh, right, my brain, you know, so sometimes I'm doing something, it's to just wander around, so I find it, you know, really difficult to sit still and I've answered my pants.
Is that ADHD or do you think it's part of addiction?
I think it's probably, yeah, but I think if you've got addictive personality, I think ADHD walks hand in hand. And maybe when I was a kid, it wasn't really a thing and I got diagnosed later in life and it's just because I wanted just to be aware of maybe, oh, that makes sense why my brain is like 100 miles an hour. But, you know, I don't take medication. I'm just aware of who I am today and what I can do.
So did you go back to a school after you got expelled at 5?
I had to go to a special school after that. So, but it just, you know, and I sort of did calm down and did sort of get, you know, but I do look back now and just think from that age, like I realised that I was just maybe like undiagnosed, you know, like, so I took that first drink, like most people over the park or whatever at the age of like 12 and 13. I wasn't introduced to drugs till I was 16. So the age of 13, I started DJing at 11, like buying records and stuff like that. And at 13, I'd run we were running under 18s events and stuff like that. And then I was actually DJing in nightclubs at 16 years old. I've got an older brother. It's a bit easier to get in then. And one of our friends was a club promoter, so I was just doing warm-up sets. I just love music. Like, my granddad loves music. I love music and film. So, you know, I constantly listen to music all the time. I never thought, oh, I want to be a DJ. And it wasn't maybe as like, now it's like everyone's a DJ. Everyone in their nan's a DJ. I was supposed to be a DJ.
I had a similar mind to you early. I was always bouncing around. I couldn't sit still. But I went into sports and did stuff like that. And really it was like I look now, it's like more of a safe space, but back then it was just something I liked to do because it gave me excitement and endorphins and it was something I was good at. Is that how you felt when you went into DJing?
Yeah. I mean, I've always done sports as well. So I'm like high risk, like I'll jump out of a plane, you know, like, yeah, everything's like.
I wouldn't do that, by the way.
That's amazing.
That's one thing I won't do.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's really good. Yeah. It's amazing. And so like, I just, you know, like I eat fast, I drive fast, I talk fast, I want everything now. you know, and that's kind of how I live. And I try and be a bit calmer. But yeah, you know, in sports and DJing, it, you know, we talk about how I arrived. And I guess, you know, from playing in clubs at 16, you know, women drink drugs, all the free at that age. It's like, well, I really had arrived. These were the perfect things. And, you know, I work in an industry, you know, probably similar to your industry, where they encourage us to drink, use and party. And it's like, you know, DJs are applauded for being the biggest caner and all that kind of stuff. And I do think that's changing a little bit now with society, and we'll cover that. But yeah, the early days, it was great fun.
When you took the first drink at 12, did that have a massive effect on you, or was you just part of what you was doing?
Yeah, I think it's just part of it. I think it's just part of growing up, isn't it? Like, I look at my girls now and I'm like, you know, scares the life out of me. The thought, you know, they're a bit younger, but the thought of that kind of stuff. But I think it's just what you do, isn't it? You know, your dad gives you a beer at a young age. My dad's not a drinker either, which is quite funny. And my brother's not really a drinker either. And my sister's not a big drinker either, really. But me, I obsess about everything. Mm. You know, and I have that obsessive nature. And you know, like when I first walked into my first recovery meeting, I didn't go, oh, you know, I'm obsessive. I walked in here and I was like, my life is, you know, in a bad way. Don't want to be here. I don't want to be hanging around people like you and that kind of stuff. But you know, I look back and I'm obsessive about everything. So what I did, you know, I tried many things to stop drinking and using, but what I did was I started running, and I'd never run before. And I remember getting up to 6 miles and I was like, that's the most I'll ever do. Then I run a half marathon, then I run a marathon. But when I run London, I was staying in a hotel around the corner from here. I had drugs in the safe when I got back from the London Marathon. Now, that's not normal.
How old was this?
That was when I was early 30s, and I'd managed to get a bit clean. After that, it really went downhill, but I'd get little bits of clean time where that obsessive nature would focus on something, and I run it for a really good cause. And also I'd done the London Triathlon, and the same thing in my gym bag, I had stuff with me at the end of the race, like as a treat. You know, and I've cycled to Paris as well. I've done that, and we've done the same thing at Paris. You know, I just go missing. But it's, for me, it's that obsessive nature. You know, so you know, like I've never run before, and I'm running marathons. I've done an ultra marathon when I got clean and stuff like that. But so now I use that obsessive nature into recovery and helping people and stuff like that. So if that's how I run and if that's how I cycle, what am I like when I drink and use? You know, it's just full on. You know, it's everything.
So, you started DJing really early, actually.
Mm.
How was that? Because you started to go into clubs and parties and stuff at 13.
Yeah, we were doing under 18s parties. So that wasn't like a regular thing. But from sort of, I'd say, you know, from 16, once I got 18, you know, probably like most weekends since then, you know, I've been doing it over 30 years. I've been in and out of clubs. You know, I've played in clubs when they've not even opened. You know, like I've been through the different scenes, the house scene, the garage scene, you know, started playing like drum and bass and stuff like that. And now I do sort of less clubs now, and I do more. I've got an events company and we do some really cool parties. We've got singers, bongo players, sax players. I use a lot of the artists I've worked with that probably wouldn't work for, you know, these kind of events. Mm. Bring them together and we have proper parties, because experience is what makes a party.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can book DJ Dave from down the road, you know, and he might turn up with a controller, but, you know, we've got proper equipment, proper DJs, professional artists. You know, we don't mess about.
It's good. I see you still get excited about the music.
I love it, yeah. I love it.
How in the beginning was it for work, though? Because I got some friends who are DJs, and again, it was part of the scene. They was drinking and sniffing, and someone I know, I won't mention their name, ended up really messing up and not being able to work anymore. How did alcohol and drugs affect you in the beginning?
Well, it was all right, because I'm always quite in control. So I would often, like, we've used to run loads of events around like where we are now, around this way. And so I would probably turn up and I'm pretty on the ball. So it was funny, when I got clean, people were like, I didn't even know that you were, you know, because you see certain DJs, stuff like that, when they're off the red and they're on social media and stuff, then people go, oh, right, I see why he's in recovery. But because I'm always quite on it and stuff like that, I wouldn't often drink until maybe the end of the
work.
Yeah, so yeah. I wouldn't often. So you wouldn't see me like in a DJ box, like swinging around off my nut, really, because it's just not my style. You know, my style was, I would run an event, I'd take the door money and I'd be off running for 2 or 3 days. You know, I would go and I would, you know, we talk about it in the big book, like it's like the lone wolf. That's certainly my story. You know, I would, you know, use, and in the end it come on my own. So, and then, you know, in the end I would turn up for gigs after not sleeping for 2 and 3 days. That's how it got towards the end. But it didn't start off like that. You know, it's like.
So you literally, you work and then you go off on like a couple of day benders. So did you deliberately wait till the end of the night before you started to party?
Yeah, because I was to get twitchy and get, you know, I'd go in myself. I can't speak and stuff like that. So I would go in myself. So it's no good, you know, and I would wait.
So
and,
you was aware then?
Well, I guess so. Yeah, I was aware of what would happen. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. There were certain places where I worked at and it's not frowned upon. You know, it's not frowned upon in that industry to turn up and go for a meeting in London and go, oh, I got a bit, you know, it's not normal. Whereas it should be, you know, like I haven't turned up today and gone, oh, I've got a bit of thing if you fancy it, you know what I mean? But when you're in that life and you're in that industry, it's just part of it. And then, yeah, we're going off drinking in 2 days and people still do that. But, you know, I was just, you know, I thought I was going to die. Like, I thought I was going to die. I could not stop. And I got, you know, when I was in my 30s, I got into some really dark places and it was just, yeah. You know, we talk about that eternal snap. I didn't wake up one day and thought, because people ask all the time, oh, you know, did you decide to stop drinking? I was like, no, not really. I said it was a long while, a long process, but I went into recovery when I was 30, went to a meeting in Hartford, and, you know, and the bloke there said to me, oh, you'd have to stop drinking. And I was just like, I'm not going to do that, mate. Why would I? Well, I wouldn't have even associated people that didn't drink. Like, you know, and it was like 4.5 years later, I went back to that same meeting and that same guy was still there. You probably know him, actually. And, yeah, and I was in a really, really, really dark place. But like I say, it was that progressive thing. You know, probably from like early 20s, I was using really different. You know, I was using on my own and stuff like that. And yeah, it progressively got worse. Maybe like middle 20s, it got really bad. But I still like another 10 years of, oh, I'll beat this. You know, like the story. Yeah, I can beat this. I can do this. We'll start again on Monday. And it just got worse. Like I say, I went into recovery at 30 and I just thought, never drink again. Just no chance. But you know, like I said, I'd gone out and just the using and just the stuff that happened was just dark.
What was your thing? Drink and coke, or
yeah, drink and drugs. It's more, it's probably more the gear. If it was like a pick one, but obviously one don't go out the other. But yeah, you know, I'd try to sniff a little bit as well. And you never know how much to share, you know, how much to say. But that's the truth of it. That's why.
So I would set it out. Yeah. Whatever you don't want to say.
Oh, that's fine. Well, it is what it is. If it's out there, it's out there. It's not a secret. But
how did it affect your working in then? Because did you stop turning up for gigs, or did it affect how you played?
No, because I've been, it's like second nature. So you could tie both my arms up and I could still, you know, I'd always turn up for gigs, probably as well because I wanted the money as well. You know what it's like when you're in that state, you know, it's all about money, money, money. And but you know, one guy I used to work for, I would turn up and he would pay me in stuff, and you know, I didn't end up owning money as well. So it's not a very good business model, you know. And I achieved some really cool stuff. Like we worked for some big brands and stuff like that in the early days. I've lived abroad. I've done a geographical. I lived abroad. Lived in Greece for a couple of years, and you can't really get stuff out there. But we were drinking every day. But when you're young, it's kind of what you do. And I remember coming back, and I was playing at Charlie Chan's, which we spoke about earlier, and it was my first day back, and I thought, right, I've had 6 months off, so I'm telling myself, don't use, and then that couple of drinks in, and I'm off and running, and I was just like, oh, I can't believe I've had 6 months off, like, but yeah, so I've always done cool stuff, and like, we used to work at the Brit Awards, and we've, you know, worked some big brands, and we used to, you know, to work for Channel 4, and Big Brother, and all these kind of stuff, so I've always achieved some really cool stuff, like, I always managed to do some, you know, some really good stuff. But when I got clean, I remember thinking, am I going to have a DJ again? Like, and I remember I was five days in. So I stopped, my clean date was on a Monday, and I was 5 days in, I had an event where I live. And I remember being in there thinking, how can I stop? drinking and using, like, I'm in these places, you know, and anyone keep saying to me, you know, you have heard it, like, keep getting hairdressers, you'll get a haircut and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, how can I stop? And I thought, you know, maybe I'll never have to do this again. But my experience is if you put recovery first, you can do anything you want to do. And the stuff we do now is just is levels above what we used to do. And that's clean and sober in an industry where everyone drinks and use. And actually, I've got friends in our industry that said because they didn't drink and party, they feel that actually held them back in our industry because they weren't at the after parties. They were kind of looked upon a bit. Why are you not doing what we do? It's mad, isn't it?
No, it's not. That's part of our society.
Yeah, sad.
It's part of how you socialise and in the modelling game. It was a lot of dinners, lots of socialising, lots of parties to be seen. So you put in front of people so they remember who you are. You know, it's that's how it is. I think now it's changed a lot because it's got more corporate. So there's a lot more money involved and people more about the brands being successful in a different way rather than creative. But I don't think it's abnormal in our culture.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be though. You know, it shouldn't be. You know, you can get stuff delivered quicker now than you can a pizza. Mm. You know, my friends have got all these guys, the postcode guys, and they ping them in like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Sad really, but... But yeah, I just, I didn't know. I just thought, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. And I just kind of dug deep and, you know, and I went through the process that we go through.
What happened then? So you came back. So after your second residency, you came back, you didn't do coke for 6 months. Then you went to Charlie Chan's and DJ'd.
Yeah.
Then you had that night. And then did that kick back off that you was
back
on again?
Yeah, back on it. Yeah. So, and it was like the same with like, when I run the marathon, I was like, just run like 26 miles. Like, I am strong-willed. I must be. But when it came to drinking drugs, I was just powerless. You know, I had no control over that. And I just remember thinking, you know, I run the London Triathlon. And I was just like, you know, it's 2-3 days later and I'm back here again. You know, I just couldn't understand it. But I now understand that I am strong-willed. I was just channeling it into the wrong areas, you know.
Yeah, I mean, focusing on the wrong addiction things. More powerful than willpower, I believe.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Habit isn't.
Yeah.
Addiction is like, it's a powerful thing to have.
But when your mind is telling you and your body's craving it, you know.
That's addiction.
Yeah, you know, when it's mind and body, you're like, how am I ever going to beat that? And yeah, it was, and I never knew anyone who got clean. You know, I didn't talk about this stuff for probably like 5 years. Mm. I probably didn't because I just thought, you know, I'd probably mess it up or I don't know. It was a lot of a blur.
It's important as well because, you know, for... this podcast, we've got a big audience that's not in recovery as well as in recovery. But it's important if someone's in recovery to have anonymity because there was that famous story of in the 50s of an American actress who found a 12-step program, went on to talk shows and she's like, oh, everyone should do it, I'm saved. And then drunk a year later and then died. It's not a good advertisement. So that's why anonymity is important. The reason why we're doing this podcast is because I had mine out busted and I realise now times have changed a bit anyway. And I don't speak for any fellowship. I'm just educating people about where you can go. But also, if you go down that road, that you can come out of it and then be more successful, like you just said. When you, what was the sort of later points? Because I knew I had a problem about 28, and I didn't get sober till 33, and I was struggling with that 5-year period of having some moments I was okay. Getting a suntan, getting vitamins, going down the gym, going back to work and not going out. But I would always be pulled back in. What was your experience for the last few years?
Yeah, it was the same thing. You know, I went to meetings in 30s and I thought, okay, so if I don't drink, then nothing's going to happen. And that kept me sober. You know, I did have some clean time, you know, off the back of going to meetings, stuff like that. But just that 4.5 years was just, you know, I just would do things that I didn't. You know, and it was mainly a party for one.
Why did you come in though? What was the bit when you're like, okay, I need to sort myself out?
So, you know, we say that we're not supposed to go in for anyone else, but it was my wife, you know, she wasn't my wife then and she is now. But you know, I just thought I was gonna lose her and you know, we don't get clean for no one else, but it's a good way of getting someone into a meeting and I thought and she lived with me for a year and you know, like you know, only being really horrible to him because you wanted to go so you can just carry on doing what you want to do. And she never got, she left the house, got to the car park and never left me. You know, she's like, she's an, like, heaven sent, like she's an absolute angel, and anyone knows her knows that she is. And that was the catalyst for me. That was the start. But there was, do you know what, actually, I think after that, when I went back to the meetings, it got worse, because I was like, well, I'm going to the meetings, ain't I? Well, I'm trying, because it's your fault. It ain't my fault. Mm. It's always your fault. It was never my fault, you know? And that was such a flip when someone said, what's your part in it? You know, I ain't got a part in it. You know, and people say, oh, I come into recovery and I was sick of apologising. I didn't apologise because I was never wrong, you know? And, you know, we talk about resentments, and I was like, yeah, I didn't have resentments. I just hated everyone. You know, I was so lost. I was so confused. You know, there was always that good person inside, but put a drink or a drug in me and the bets are off. I didn't care whether I was here or not, you know?
Yeah.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is sad, because it's really sad. A lot of people take their lives, but actually what they're trying to do is get rid of the shame, guilt, and the noise in their head.
Yeah.
So they take the wrong person, really.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because I know a few people that took their lives recently.
Same.
And, it's sad, because there is a way out, I believe, for everyone. You know, you can always start again.
Yeah.
What was your last catalyst? Mine was a very dark 2 day or 3 day fucking bender, and I just actually completely hit the floor and was like, I need help.
I don't know if it was the worst, like, because you always think, like, oh, I should have had that big long run and stuff like that. But we'd gone to Mexico and we'd go to. Yeah, it just, you know, Mexico's quite a crazy place, isn't it? And that was kind of my last, that was my plan in my last use up. And we was in, have you been Coco Bongo?
Where's that?
It's in Mexico.
No.
Have you been there?
No, where's that? I was thinking of Cabo then for a minute.
No, you know the mask, the film?
Yeah.
They shot that there.
Okay.
So I've never told this story before, but here we go. So we'd got there, and then I snuck out to go and do what I need to do. And I come back in, the bloke's like, where you been? And I was like, oh, you know, always lying, aren't we? Oh, I can't believe it. I went outside because I thought I was going to be sick, and I've come back in now. And then my wife had just, like, she just knew what I did, you know. And, you know, again, it's always that lies, and it lies, lies, lies. And then, so and that was the only place that Coco Bongo is, like, the only place in Mexico. Cancun is the only place in Mexico. I think that they're like quite, they were on its thing. So I was in a toilet, and they've come over the thing, and they've caught me. So I come back out, and they were trying to drag me out, and security were there. And I was like, well, I'll go get my wife. I come back in, I turn around, the whole security staff was there. And everyone I was with was like, what's going on? I was like, well, we got to go now, you know? but like, if I was with my mates back here, they would just laugh. But I didn't even know these people, you know? And then the next day, the guy was like, what's on? And I was like, oh, I had a row or something in the toilet. And like, yeah, I mean, you lie, lie, lie. And yeah, just these people didn't do that. And I was just, you know, we were just
making
on holiday.
A good impression.
Yeah. And then the next day, I think I'd got back in, it was all fine. The next day, you know, we had a big day thing, and I'd ended up doing all tequila and puking up and falling asleep and missing the next night. And yeah, you know, it was just stuff like that. But it was like, where I come from, most people drink and use, which is quite, you know, it's really, you know. So when I got clean, I thought, right, you know, I want to be getting clean with me. And like I said, I didn't know anyone that got clean when I got clean. And 10 years ago, you know, I've really seen the change in the last few years, which is great. And like you said about the actress that had sort of spoke about it. And that was what I was really scared about, was, you know, was telling people. And even now, like, I'm like, you know, like I do, you know, I try not to talk about it too much on social media. Obviously my daughter, my phone's always open, and people's messaging me, and I get, probably same as you, I get messages all the time of people saying, I've seen your podcast, I've seen what you do, and, you know, and then they message me and say, oh, you know, and I say, oh, look, and because I've been in recovery, I can normally get them into meetings of people around the country and stuff like that. And then I get a message like 6 months later saying, oh, Ross, it's, and I will say to them, look, please let me know you're getting on, good or bad, because I want to know. And they'll say, oh, I'm 6 months clean. And I think, who's this geezer? And I go back through the messages and I go, oh, I remember. You know, probably like same as you, I get a lot of that. And it's mad to be in a situation where I can just try and help people, but I try not to try and go on about it.
Even though we're doing this, it's something I hold quite private, actually.
Yeah.
And unless my family, my extended family, listen to this, then they wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Or if they've read something, they wouldn't
know.
Yeah,
I'll tell them not to listen. I'll say, don't listen. Yeah, I'll just, yeah. It's about getting honest and stuff like that. And, you know, my wife won't listen, because she goes, I live that stuff. I don't need to hear that again.
No, exactly.
You know, and that's really, nice, really difficult. But yeah, my other family, I'm like, just don't listen. But because it's important that I get honest, you know, it's important that I talk about this stuff. But yeah, after like maybe 5 years, I was like, I've done, you know, my first podcast, and now, you know, I work with a couple of charities and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I do a lot of stuff with mental health and with people, and I've done suicide awareness, and, you know, I've done sober events and stuff like that. And
how do you find sober events? Because they're quite a new phenomenon, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I find, I don't want to speak out of term, but some of the other ones may be a bit dated. Like, and I don't really want to, I think anyone who's trying to do something to help people is amazing, but, you know, I just try and do something a bit more current. So what does that mean?
What do you do? What sober events you do that's current?
Well, the music is a bit more current. I think right. Some of them the music, I think, was a bit, I find it a bit, you know, dated. Just kind
what
of
like
bit,
ABBA.
Yeah, maybe not as dated as ABBA, but even, yeah, I don't know. Like, times have moved on. People have moved on. You know, yeah. Music's moved on. And just trying to, you know, people are young when they get into recovery. And there's loads of youngsters to come in. So I think you play a bit more current music rather than some of the older stuff. You know, and what I've done, what I've done at my own sober events is I put we have speakers on first as well. So we have, I've got a wellness business. So we've got like doctors talk about ADHD. She's written books on ADHD, and there's a little team of us that are sober, like Brandon Block. There's a few of us, Paul Denana, you know, as well, was part of our,
bless him.
You know, there's a few of us in recovery. They're not all in recovery, but there's a few of us that do, you know, stuff around mental health and that. And we're all in the music industry as well. Mm. So we try and do stuff around that. But I put on my own sober events and I get people in talking about recovery and stuff like that. And
so is that, so the format is they come in, you've got an event. Is it food or it's just like you come, they list, you do like talks and then you put on music after?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Just trying to say, look, like my last event, one of my DJs, Paris, she's like an international DJ and she's a producer. She's like amazing. She doesn't drink. Now, she doesn't drink for the same reasons that me and you don't drink, but she just doesn't drink, which is great. You don't all have to be like, wrong ones like we got to. You don't have to. You know, there's loads of people that are stopping drinking now, which is great. I think it's great. So the sober movement's really good and there's people with different experiences. You know, I have experiences to carnage, but I don't think it's got to be that way. Loads of people are just stopping for health reasons, the youngsters not drinking now and stuff like that. But it is difficult to try and push that narrative as well, because I've done a company that I work with, they've got some boxes and that at the O2, and they gave me some tickets last year, went to see Elton John, and they're really nice. They're a quite a well-known family and stuff like that. So they were asking me about the DJ and stuff like that, and I said, oh, I'm doing sober stuff. And they're like, couldn't care less about it. They're like, no one cares about your sober stuff. Tell us about the good stuff, you know. So it's not for everyone. But, you know, people are struggling. And like I say, I get a lot of late night messages as well. You know, and then people will take them back and stuff like that. And I'm like, look, you know, the meeting should be busy. People are really difficult, especially drinking drugs, you know, the pandemic, you know, ketamine and stuff like that is another one that everyone, it's scary. But you ain't got to be that way. It hasn't got to be. That's not got to be your story. I don't want it to be my story. That ain't going to be my story, you know? But it's just out of time.
How sober are you now?
10 years and about 7 months, something like that. So
have you seen a change in yourself through your sobriety?
I hope so, yeah. Yeah,
what's
definitely.
Changes?
I think...
Because some people don't know what that means.
Yeah. Well, I think... Do you know what? I think being clean, being abstinent from drink and drugs... Being in recovery is two different things. Because you can be abstinent from alcohol and that's fine. But, you know, like, if you're like me, you've got a crazy head, like, we need to look at this stuff. You know, I'm not an idiot, right? I know it's not right to drink. I know it's not good to sniff gear after the London Marathon. And I know it's not good to have drugs on me after the London Triathlon. I know that. I'm not an idiot, right? There's a reason why I was doing what I was doing. And, you know, recovery has given me the ability to look at my life and make the wrongs and go back and try and live a different way, you know, a peaceful way. You know, I have a morning routine. You know, I do cold water stuff. I do breath work. You know, I go running. You know, I've tried Buddhist chanting. You know, I'm really open to trying things, but, you know, stuff that I never would have done before. And I remember I was eating a lot of food when I got to a year clean. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not drinking or using, so it's fine. And maybe that was fine for a year. And I've looked at that stuff. I do fasting, and you know, like I say I go gym 5 days a week. I'd go 7 days a week. In fact, I'd go more if I could. You know, really. So I try and channel that into, you know, recovery meetings. You know, if I get time off work, like this weekend, my wife's away with the girls, so I'm going to go to a convention. You know, I try and have this stuff everywhere in my life. You know, like we say, my friend Steve says, like, recovery's like a jacket. You know, don't wear it like a straight jacket, but have it as part of your life. I listen to Chairs, I listen to your podcast, you know, and I try and do, you know, like I'm into Joe and Charlie at the moment, you know, and I'm just, you know, I constantly go to meetings. Probably sometimes I don't go for a week, sometimes I do a couple of week. You know, I run an online meeting as well, which we started in lockdown, which is just on the phone, which sounds weird, but and we just kept it going. So I just, you know, I try and associate with people that don't drink and want to better themselves and all that, which sounds a bit cheesy, but it's true. You know, I just want to be the best version I could be. I missed 34 years of my life from drinking and using. I don't want to waste around and do that again.
What's the one thing that's really helped you the most in recovery?
I think looking at my part in it was a big thing, because it was never my fault, it was your fault. And that really released a lot of, oh, I can't control what Paul does. Oh, I can't control what Dave says. Or I can't control what he does, but I can control what I do. And that was a big thing. You know, I always thought it was everyone else's fault. You know, I always thought, if you had my life, you'd do what I did. And how did my life look? I come from the best family I could have ever dreamed of, you know.
Which really is weird, because then it's a victim mentality, isn't it? Even though you've had an amazing upbringing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it was like, you know, I was always really quick to anger, and I'm quite aggy, you know, and that was just fear. I didn't realise that. I remember my first sponsor, he said to me, oh, you're full of fear. I ain't fucking scared of no one. I'm scared of everything, you know what I mean? I've got IGS, you know, imaginary gangster syndrome.
You know? I've not heard that before.
Yeah, in my head, you know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the problem, is in my head, you know. I've got a really loud head, and you know, through inventory and the steps and stuff like that, it quietens that down. It's like a washing machine, you know. 95% of the time I'm bouncing around, and I'm, you know, but there's them one days are just like, you're just a piece of shit. But yeah, that was a big thing. I mean, there's like a million things I could say that I've learned. You know, I never thought I would be doing this stuff. I never thought I'd be clean and sober in my industry and doing what we do. But here we are. But a day at a time.
But it's important to say, like you said, that actually you're doing better now than you were when you was partying, because that's a grand illusion, isn't it, in the arts, and music and film and TV, that actually being on something makes you more creative or gives you some edge. Yeah. But actually, it takes it away.
Yeah, well, they talk about, like, the Beatles, right, like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and all that off their nut. Mm. When I'm off my nut, right, I'm not writing greatest hit songs. I'm not thinking about anything. All I'm thinking about is, I'm locked away. I ain't thinking about anything. And, you know, like when I run events, I'm on the ball. You know, when the clients, I'm like, cool, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. I'm on the phone, bang. You know, the opposite of what you do when you're drinking and using. You know, I wouldn't speak to people for days. Yeah, the phone would ring and I'd be like, I never used to be able to open letters. I'd go, oh, I don't need that one. Bang, straight in the bin. You know, like, just can't deal with life. And I got booked for an event recently, and I got told the lineup, and I was just like, wow, he's on there. You know, but that's like regular stuff, you know, and just like, wow, is that really real? Like I said, I've always done stuff before, but just from getting clean and sober, the opposite of what we encourage people to do in our industry, it's open up the world. And I know, like, the gigs just get bigger, and we're going to do some more amazing stuff.
For me, I try to, because I was so obsessive before and compulsive, that I really try and trim the fat off that. So I know when we spoke earlier, like, you was coming up early, and I thought, oh, has he got a different time? But he likes to be on time. I like to be on time and early, because I never showed up on time and early before. But I try and, like, with the gym, for example, when I went into treatment originally, there was no gym. They said, you can't use a gym. And I was like, why not? It's part of my health. And it was because, in case you get addicted to the gym. How do you find that? Because that's something I could get addicted to very, very easily. So I kind of try and I moderate myself for that.
I don't have a moderate button. So I think if I'm going gym 5 days a week, I don't think that's... And then, like we spoke earlier on, I thought you might think, has he got the wrong time? But yeah, I just like if I'm doing your party and I'll say, you need me there for two, I'm there at 1:30. You know, I like to be early. I like to be organised. I like to be on time. Yeah. Kind of, you know, like back in the day, I would have been late and I'd been, oh, sorry, Paul, the trains were late. Nightmare, you know, and all that. Oh, I'm never going to believe it. And that, so I just try and act differently now. Like I was never a morning person, You know, I'm up at 5:30 every day. So yeah, it is difficult now. I've spoke about before, I just had twin girls. So, you know, all this stuff is completely different, you know, and,
How did you sleep with them? Bloody hell. I remember I didn't really sleep for the first 6 months when I had
They're pretty good. My wife, she's like Mary Poppins. Like, you've never seen anything like it. She's unbelievable. But yeah, we're learning. And it was funny because everyone said, oh, you're not going to know what's hit you. And here we are. And it's, you know, we've took them to Scotland. We're taking them on holiday. You know, we're taking them away on holiday. You know, we do everything with them. And but yeah, so what happened was I was working a lot in the summer because I work away and stuff as well. So I was working in Santorini and she was like, Kat was like 36 weeks pregnant. So it was not the time to be going away, but yeah. It was a friend of ours and I couldn't let him down. I never let people down. I come back on, I landed on a Wednesday from Santorini. The girls come out on a Monday. 6 days later, I was 10 years clean and sober.
Amazing.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah. You know, and it's like, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I don't let clients down. I'm not going to the cup final next week in Bilbao because I've got an event the next day and I can't risk it. But yeah, I just, if I do what I say I'm going to do.
Yeah, which is great.
Times 10.
What's the organisations you work with?
So Mates is a organisation that I work with. I'm a moderator. So it's a men's group on Facebook started by Dapper Laughs, yep. Daniel O'Reilly, who has had a really tough time. He got cancelled and for saying something on TV, a joke. He got cancelled and he's really struggled. Well, I'm not here to tell Dan the story, but that's quite in the open.
Yeah.
And Dan set this group up where basically it's all men in there with about 50,000, I think. And we're just there just trying to help each other. Someone will put something in a group. I haven't seen my kids for 2 years, whatever. And people will say, oh, right, I've been through that. And it's about shared experiences. You know, I don't jump on the stuff I've got no experience about. Yeah. It's like someone will say, oh, I went to this, so I've done that. And that's how we're trying to help each other. But do you know what the really sad thing is? That probably every other day we get messages, people saying, I want to kill myself.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. We're not experts. We're just a bunch of guys that are just trying to help.
I don't think you have to be an expert. I think there is a problem with communication. And I think if someone's in a safe space where another guy, it depends how you answer as well, because you have to be present and think about what you're going to say, because the old narrative would be, oh, you're all right, nothing's a problem.
Man.
But to listen and to hear people, I think, takes away half the power of it.
Yeah. So we get that. So I'm a trustee for that charity, and I'm trustee for the Rainbow Charity as well. It's about, so we message them back. We don't normally post that stuff. We message them back and we give them a load of people to contact basically. But we just try and help. That's all we're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's trying to navigate all them guys is pretty.
It's a lot of people.
So yeah, that's what we try and do with a men's charity, and we've got events coming up and stuff like that. And yeah, Daniel's amazing. You know, he's been through, and again, I'm not here to tell his story, but he's sober and his life's just doing that, but he's just trying to help and give back.
What's the events you do just to get everyone together?
Yeah. So we've got a comedy night launched. I've going to do the music and stuff as well. But we've got loads of really, really big plans for some really good stuff that we're going to be doing over the next year. But the other charity I work with...
What's the name of the other charity you work for?
It's the Phoenix Charity. So it helps people in recovery, looks at giving them options of getting clean and sober. They do like weekends away. It's amazing. It's an amazing charity.
Where are they based?
They're based in Hartford. They've got a charity shop in Hartford as well.
Can you connect that, my charity, to theirs?
Of course, yeah. They'd love to have
That'd
you.
That'd be
yeah.
really cool.
Yeah, they're I'd amazing. Love to see what Big shout out to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're and I just, you know, that's what I want to be surrounded by, people that want to help people. There's no motives there or anything like that. You know, just want to be around good people trying to do good things. And together, we can achieve loads. And maybe that's a little bit further down the line, you know, if you're in a place where you can't stop using. But, you know, there's loads of help out there. And like I say, so much more accessible now. People are talking about it. And the amount of people I've seen come out, and I didn't realise they were sober, so it's great.
Mm. For those who are still suffering or thinking about coming to recovery, what advice would you give them to be their first move?
I'd say get to a meeting. It's like...
For those who don't know what a meeting is, what do you mean?
So you can go online.
Yeah.
Drop me a message, I'll help you. If you drop me an inbox, I'll help you get to a meeting. There's loads of 12-step meetings out there. Jump on Google, but yeah, there's loads of meetings everywhere. I would say get to a meeting. So like I joined a running club years ago, and it was when I was running best, because I was around people that were in the same kind of, you know, I was running, and that's kind of what recovery is about for me, is kind of getting with people with the same mindset, the same, you know, the same goals. I want to get clean. And you know, and that was what really worked. Is for me, it's about getting a community around me, because I've got friends that are sober that don't have what I've got. They haven't really done meetings, and that, look, do what works for you. But for me, I love that community. You know, I've got my home group on a Tuesday that I go to, and it's just somewhere really, I get to choose, I get that nice warm feeling when I'm going to go to a meeting tonight, and I'm going to get a hug, and I'm going to see someone. You know, there's a lot of laughter and a lot of love in meetings. Yeah. You know, as you know, it's a beautiful thing to be part of, and it's somewhere where you can go when you keep messing up, and they'll welcome you back warm with a hug and a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or a biscuit. You know, there's not many places like that, and it's free. You know, you think how much money you'd spend on drink and drugs, stuff like that. You know, it's a couple of quid in the pot.
Yeah.
And you'll meet some amazing people that want to help. Mad, isn't it?
It's brilliant. Ross, thank you very much.
No worries.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
This Is Powerful is brought to you by Stride Foundation. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please head over to www.stridefoundation.com, where you can find links to resources that may help. You can also donate. Please make a donation. It will help us bring to you more episodes. Please rate, follow, and subscribe to the show. Why? This will help the algorithm make us more visible to others who need help. And share this podcast with your family, friends. Head over to social media at Paul Scolfort and at @this_is_powerful. You'll get to see what's coming up, and you can get in touch with us, because I love hearing about you. Thank you also to my beautiful wife, Dr. Federica Amati, the best producer, Shannon Delwich, to Eber Long, who does all the hard work in the background. Thank you also to Ria Musa and the rest of the team. Did you know also you can watch us on YouTube? Just search for This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scolfort. Hi, everybody. I'd really love to hear your views so that we can produce a podcast with the content that matters to you. It doesn't matter if you just joined us or if you've been listening from the start. We would love you to fill in the short listener feedback form, which you can find in the show notes. And let me know your thoughts on our podcast. It would really mean a lot. Thanks, guys.